fleeting glimpses of things seen through a veil, darkly. Do we understand the meaning of these visions of life? Why we are here and how little of our existence we truly understand? Tonight we will talk of these things on The Other Side.
Welcome to The Other Side. I am Jim Harold and so glad to be with you once again. And I think we're going to have a fascinating show for you. We're going to talk about a book just out this month. It is called August, that is we're recording this. It's called Slavic Witchcraft, Old World Conjuring Spells and Folklore. And we have the author of that book with us, Natasha Halvin. She has a great background to talk about this. She was born in the Soviet Union, and she is an occultist, hereditary witch, and priestess in the Haitian Vodou tradition, as well as an avid scholar of other magical traditions. She learned the ancient Slavic secrets of magic and healing from her family, and as a child, often saw her grandmother and mother use magic in their everyday lives to help neighbors and friends. A professional root worker and spiritual coach, she lives in the Pacific Northwest. And Natasha, welcome to the program today.
Hi, Jim. Thank you for having me.
I have a slight confession to make. We were going to talk about your upcoming book, Russian Black Magic, and then I saw you had this one on. I said, well, this is out now. Maybe we could talk about that. We'll talk about that next one on a future show, but I'm fascinated by that. Actually, I grew up in a neighborhood in the city that I'm from, Cleveland, Ohio, and I grew up in an area called Slavic Village. So we had a lot of Eastern Europeans in that area and people from the old country, as it were. And I always found those cultures very, very interesting. Talk to us about the Slavic peoples and how important witchcraft was for many of them and how it was important for your family and your experience.
Well, witchcraft, when I was grew up in my family, it was just a way of living, a way of life, of everyday doing. We wake up by witchcraft, and we went to sleep by witchcraft. What I mean by that is that, let's say, for example, to make you understand, and I talk about that in my previous radio talk shows, let's say we wake up in the morning and we have a breakfast. So after you clean the table, you need to clean the table, not with you and naked hands, but you need to take some towel or some napkins and clean the table with them, because it, considering that if you clean with naked hand, you will be in hunger lay around. So it's so we kind of like live by those rules, or whatever you call it. And that was just about every part of our lives during the day. Everything was connected. Like if you go into outside, let's say we went outside, because I was growing up in a very tiny small village on the farm. My mother has a farm. So we kind of grow up in a house where we didn't have water, or toilet was outside, that kind of things. So when you went to get water from outside and you see the person comes to you with empty buckets, we return back home, because that was considered bad luck. So we kind of live by this superstition belief thing, but which considering today witchcraft or so. That's
so. In your book, you talk about pagan Christianity or Christian paganism. How does or did Christianity play in this? And was it kind of a combination of the witchcraft lifestyle, the pagan lifestyle mixed with Christianity? How did that work?
Yeah, I'm explaining in my books how they mix together. First of all, the baptism of Russia, of Slavs, it lasted for 200 years. It took them a long time to be able to invert people to Christianity. And then again, still, as of today, all these Christian, Orthodox Christian holidays, they are at the same days that people were celebrating pagan holidays. So church has to adapt those dates, because there was no other way to do it. Christianity, after baptism of Slavs, that's where, let's say, people, pagans back then, we believe in gods, like god of the wind, god of the water, god of the rain. So all those after baptism, they become demons or spirits, evil spirits. So people start praying to demons. Again, I'm explaining that in my second book. We say we won't talk about that yet, but in my second book, I explain where the bad thing came from, how Christianity affected it.
Now, when people think of witchcraft, they think of something evil. I mean, some people, not a lot of our listeners, because they're familiar with Wicca and so forth and understand. But there is an association with witchcraft and evil. How do you try to explain to people about the reality of witchcraft? Now, I'm sure that it can be used for the negative. I'm sure that's the case. Like anything else, Christianity can be used in a negative way as a way to control people and things like that. And any religion really can, I think. So talk to us about witchcraft and maybe the reality versus kind of the stereotype of you know, somebody cooking up spells and potions to hurt somebody.
Well, yeah, the other day I hear about this black and white magic. First of all, I don't consider there is black or white magic. All that comes from theism and, again, from Christianity. There is bad and there is good. I do not believe in karma. I do not believe that there are bad spirits or good spirits. I believe what I believe. I believe that it's up to person who cast the spell, what he cast it for. Like you say, you can cook something for heal somebody, or you can cook something to hurt somebody. And again, there is in witchcraft, there is a balance. You cannot do just good, or you cannot do just bad. Everything is based on the balance, everything in this planet. And I mean, they would not exist word good or word bad if there wasn't one of it. There wouldn't be light without darkness. They would be, it's a balance. So when you do something, when if you manipulate the energies, let's say if you do the spell to hurt somebody, you can do it. I was talking about that in previous. You can do it as a judgment, not to hurt somebody. I mean, it depends up to caster what he does and how he does it on his experience. But again, there is no good or bad. If you believe in karma and you call yourself a witch, you're not a witch, because karma comes itself from theism, and witchcraft is not theism. In witchcraft, you honor like pagans did and do until today. They honor the gods. They don't worship them. You don't worship. You can command something you're worshiping.
And in this book, in this particular book about Slavic witchcraft, you have different kinds of spells. Now, what maybe distinguishes the Slavic version of witchcraft with other types that you might see in other parts of the world? What are some of the things that are the same, but what are some of the things that are unique to the Slavic practice of witchcraft?
Yeah, I was just talking about today, actually, with some people, and I was talking about people asking me, well, it sounds like you mix in Slavic witchcraft with voodoo or hoodoo. And I'm saying that it has nothing to do with hoodoo or voodoo. Slavic witchcraft, this is called folk magic. So you cooking spells is folk magic. Folk magic everywhere in every part of this planet is the same, because we all have the same brain. We're all humans. So I was saying, let's say my mother used to use human dry skin to keep husband, violent husband, cool, to cool him down and keep him under control from his wife. And dry human skin, I mean, she was using the skin from your feet.
So she would use her own skin, or, I mean, how would she procure that?
There was a lady that was beaten by her husband, but she didn't want to separate him. So she wanted to work on the marriage. So she came to my mother for help, and my mother used her dry skin from feet to make a potion to cool down husband. So this kind of practice, I was find out later, that was used in Greece, in Turkey, and in Haiti. And when I say in Haiti that my mother did this and this and this, they say, wow, she did voodoo, but she has no idea. She was peasant from small village and she never even heard word voodoo. So you can be from different background. You can come from different tradition, but the folk magic is the same everywhere.
That's really, really interesting. I wanted to make sure we clarified on the skin so people knew where it came from.
Yeah, that's
from.
What I'm saying. That's the dry skin from your feet. You know, this thing you washing in the shower every time you go in and you
right.
rub it. That's the skin.
Now, money, wealth, and business spells. I think that's very interesting. I think most of us want to do better in the money department and in the business department, our jobs, our careers, and all of that. How do those kind of spells work to help practitioners out in those areas?
Well, if you're doing yourself or you're going to ask somebody to do it for you, it depends. If you're doing it yourself, first of all, you manipulate energies. Again, you attract. But again, we will need to remember that this is balance. For example, if somebody will come to me and ask me to, let's say they have a store and they need more customers to sell their products. So if I do this kind of spell, I will need a balance from somewhere. Because if I want, it will take from me. So when I do this kind of spell, I will ask him for the guy next door if his store is doing well. So if his store is doing well, so I will take his luck and transfer it to this guy that came to me. That's the balance.
Interesting. Interesting.
Otherwise, if I do it without transferring, I will do work for him. He will have all the work and I will be without clients.
Interesting. Now, protection. What kind of protection are we talking about? Are we talking about physical protection? Are we talking about spiritual protection? Are we talking about both?
Spiritual protection, be honest with you, I never use spiritual protection. I never try to get rid of something that I'm evoking or calling upon. I want to call them. I want them to come. I don't want them to leave. So you need protection only, I believe, that's, again, every one of us practicing different. They all have different opinions, as many people that many opinions. But I never put protection on myself. I don't believe you need it unless you don't know what you're doing and you're afraid. And when you're shaky and on top of all, you're worshiping something, then yes, I mean, You can shake as a leaf on the tree and call upon entity. I don't believe if you're strong, if your energy is strong, if you know what you're doing, you need protection. Why do you need protection for?
Now, because I know sometimes it's a concern of people, and I think that's beyond the scope of what you do or things. People are afraid of most of these people don't know what they're doing things like Ouija boards and these kind of things. And they're afraid that darker entities will somehow enter their life. But what you're saying is that you shouldn't do these things unless you know what you're doing. And if you're knowing what you're doing, you don't need protection. Am I getting the message clear?
Exactly. Exactly. If I, let's say I have a Ouija board and I start playing just for fun, first of all, it's stupid at least. I mean, you don't do that. You don't play with these things. And if you do want to play with those things, you need to be strong enough inside you to be sure in yourself. Because it's like a dog, you know, when he smells you and he smells the fear, he will attack you or any other animal. That's how it is. I mean, I was saying in my previous shows that my first seance was when I was a child, 7 years old, with my mother and my sister. And to me, it's something that is okay, is normal. But I don't do that for fun, and I don't do that just to make sure that they are still there. They hear me, or well, connection is good.
Well, the thing is that for me, I've talked about the Ouija board many times on our different shows, and I'm not against it per se, but what I say to me is I think of it like a chainsaw. Maybe if somebody knows what they're doing, it's fine. I've interviewed quite a few people who have made their career with Ouija boards and divination and those kind of things. And they say it's just a tool and there's no problem with it and so forth. But those people know what they're doing. I don't. So it reminds me of sometimes you'll see on television these people who can take a chainsaw and they can make a beautiful sculpture. They can make an ice sculpture or a sculpture out of wood, and it's gorgeous. And it's not dangerous because they know what they're doing. On the other hand, if you hand me that saw, I might cut my arm off. And I think that's the difference.
That's right. That's exactly how it is. And you're right about Ouija board is just a tool. I mean, let's say in voodoo, we evoke the spirit, and spirit comes to our head and they talk through your head. You don't need Ouija board to communicate. When I do call upon somebody, deceased one, I do this kind of work for some people, but very rare because I don't like to do it. So if I try to communicate with somebody, they talk through my head. I don't use Ouija board. I never use Ouija board.
So it's almost a telepathic kind of situation. They just kind of come to you, to your thought process, and communicate that way.
Yes, yes. But there is nothing like getting ecstasy, roll your eyes up, and get in trance. That's not how it is. I mean, at least for me. For somebody else, it maybe that's the way to communicate with disease, but not for me. And it's very overwhelming. It's very painful. It's not something you enjoy. I wouldn't do that for money. I wouldn't do that for fun. I wouldn't do that to become famous.
Now, in this book, you talk about house and home spells. I have to believe in the Slavic culture that homes were extremely important, in the sense that maybe you were in a situation where, that maybe homes were more difficult to come by, or people appreciate their homes. I think now we're a little bit spoiled in this day and age, in our culture. We really don't think of a home as a permanent or an important thing. People will move from week to week, month to month. But I'm guessing back in the older times and in the Slavic culture, that a home was crucial, and it was like a basis of stability, and it was really, really important. So I would assume it does make sense that you would try to cast spells to protect your home and make sure your home was a safe place for you and your family.
Yes, exactly. Because your home is like a safe box. You keep your energy in there. You keep your spirits in there. You keep your power inside. Back where I was raised, this small village, there were a lot of ladies practicing witchcraft. And people, poor people, peasants, if they see that you have a cow, you reach, so they will try to hurt you, so you won't have it, you will lose it, you will be miserable. So people doing a lot of things to each other, and that was the reason that we pay a lot of attention to how we protect our home, how we protect our animals, our loved ones, and ourselves, of course, and our energy.
If let's say someone wished you ill and tried to put some type of spell against you, or some kind of, my wife is of Italian lineage and they call it the evil eye, the maloic is what I believe they call it. But if you have a protection spell on yourself, what will happen? Will it just stop that person from being successful in hurting you or the ones you love or the things that you have, or will some evil befall them? How do those spells work?
From my experience and my opinion, of course, if you want to hurt somebody, it depends on how strong you are, your energy is, and if you know what you're doing. There is always the there was for many centuries a witch can hurt the other witch, but who will win? The strongest one, of course. If your wife, let's say, will do some magic on me and she's a much stronger inside energy, she will hurt me.
Well, the thing is that my wife does not practice witchcraft and is not a witch, but I do notice in a lot of European cultures that they're very similar kind of themes. And the Italians, for example, some people call it superstition, but they believe in these things. They believe that there are powers. And it is interesting, as we talked at the beginning, how it ties in with Christianity and how they kind of, sometimes they live side by side. Somebody will be a very faithful Christian and they'll pray to the saints and they'll do all these things, but then they'll also have these beliefs in things that are almost witchcraft-like. I think it's always interesting to see how the two kind of live side by side and sometimes intertwine.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking in my second book, and I give all the details. When Christianity came and they make all these pagan gods evil, they call them demons, so people start reacting differently. That's why blasphemy came and heretics. So what they did, because they reacted like that on Christianity, they say, you need to accept our God. Our God is the good and everyone is bad. So people start reacting in a different way to Christianity. They start burning icons. They start destroying icons. They start creating hell icons. So there are witches that go into church and they create very powerful magic in churches. And I talk about that in my second book. Because we consider that if you make, you like give food to the evil, those demons the church call, to humiliate God, to humiliate saints, you give food and energy to the bad, to the demons, and you become more powerful, and that's how demons give you more power.
Interesting. Interesting. Now,
it depends. Foundation is Christianity of this black magic.
Now, you talk about cemeteries in this book, cemetery traditions. What were some of the cemetery traditions of the Slavic culture and practice of witchcraft?
Most of our work we're doing on cemeteries is a wonderful place to be. Cemeteries we use a lot for our work, for any kind of work, from love to death to curses to everything. In cemetery, you can find a lot of different energies. You can work with kids you can make with kids to go somebody crazy, because kids like to play. So they can play you until you get schizophrenia or paranoia. Or they can help you to win in gambling. You can play, you can work with couples that buried, and you can make love spell because they were lived together, they died, they buried together. So this is the energy of married couple. There can be a murderer that is buried. That's a different energy. You can cast curses with him. Or person who was sick and died from the cancer, you can work with this energy to cure someone. So then, cemeteries play a huge part in our belief system in Slavic, but I believe in other traditions as well, like Haitian voodoo is the same thing. And that's why I find it interesting, because in Haitian voodoo, there is a lot of similarities with Slavic witchcraft. Work with the dead, how you can make dead trap and make him work for you. Lots.
So you end up the book with something called Simple Tips for All Occasions. Is there a simple tip or two that you could share with us?
Simple tips, that's when we started our interview. That's why I was talking about when you get up and you would clean this breakfast table. Those tips we use every day, all day long. So let's say those tips is something that our previous generations, they noticed generation by generation, and they just give the small piece to the next generation, and that's how it gets here. So yes, those small tips is, let's say, for example, that we don't celebrate our birthdays early or later. That's a bad sign. It can call you sickness, or you can sleep with your husband or your wife in separate bedrooms, because eventually you will separate it, because you separate your energy.
Interesting. Interesting. And it is, some people call them old wives' tales, but sometimes there seems to be a lot of truth to them.
Yes. Again, you need to think about the energy and how you, if you let's say sleep in one bed with your wife and you feel uncomfortable and you need separate blanket, you need to put pillows between you. It's like you're building the wall. Again, this is the energy. Energy can react positive or negative. So what you're doing, it brings you to the negative side.
Very interesting indeed. Do you find that people in the West are open to these Slavic traditions? Has it been something so far? I mean, the book hasn't been out that long, but are people in the West receiving it well and taking its message to heart?
Well, there are people that like it. There are people that don't. That's how it's going to be for everyone and everywhere. That's totally normal.
That's true.
But the people, what I find that gets confused is that they think that folk magic in every tradition or nationality is different, and that's not true. That's where confusion comes from. I was saying today that, let's say I can cast a spell today. I'm going to the forest and I get this, cut this branch from the tree, and I do the spell with the branch of the tree. But somebody in Peru or somebody in Greece will do the same spell. That doesn't, we all come from different background, but the way of thinking, the creative way of thinking, how you cook the spell, we can do the same thing.
Very interesting. It does seem that there seems to be, as you said, a lot of crossover, a lot of commonalities, probably more commonality than difference.
Yes. Another example is that my mother used to, let's say, when you want to make people arguing, like if you want separate couple, you can put salt on a pan and fry it over the fire and put pictures on top. So you fry them. So they start arguing between each other in the house, and there will be arguments and drama and everything. But the same thing I find out that people use here in Louisiana.
Right.
So,
well, it's interesting. I want to ask you one question and then we'll go. I mean, so many times when I talk to people who practice witchcraft, they say, well, that's not true. We don't wish people ill and we don't cast spells against people and things like that. But you're saying that there are some cases where, you know of, and you've seen, where people will actively cast spells against other people for bad things to happen to them. Is that accurate?
Yes, I can do that myself. I mean, I don't wish people bad. I mean, if somebody will come to me and say, kill this person, I won't do that. I don't know the person. Person did nothing to me. But I will ask why they want it. And if there is a reason that this person wish ill the other person, I will do the work of judgment, not to kill the person. But judgment can come at different price. It can come as a death. It can come as a sickness. It can come as a mental illness, accident, wherever. But this is judgment. When you ask for judgment, first of all, you balance things. You leave it to the spirits to decide what's the best way to judge this person. It can be anything.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, we've learned something today, and we really appreciate the time of Natasha Helvin. Her latest book, or the one just out recently, is Slavic Witchcraft, Old World Conjuring Spells and folklore. Natasha, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find the book and more information about everything you do?
My books are available on Amazon. My first book is available on Amazon and everywhere that book sells. And if they're interested to see more about me and learn more about me, they can go to my website, worldofconjuring.com, or just Google my name.
Well, I must say it's been a fascinating discussion. I really appreciate your time today and continued success.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
A fascinating discussion with Natasha, and we appreciate your time and appreciate you being a Plus member. We'll talk to you next time. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.